Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Author AK. Today, I have Joseph Baskin. We share publishers, and I'm going to tell him about his new book, introduce himself, and you know how Author AK goes. Well, who knows where it goes? So, Joseph, go ahead and take it away. Introduce yourself and tell us about your book.
All right. Appreciate you having me on. So, again, Joseph Baskin. I am a psychiatrist, forensically trained, meaning I do work in jails and prisons, and right now I'm working in a jail. Publishing a book with Defiance, very excited. It's called Burning River. It's my first in a horror genre, horror supernatural, although it's more what I've heard is termed naturalistic. It's not my first novel. It's my fifth novel, actually. And usually I write things that are more on the humor / dark comedy thriller side of things. But this one came from a different place. And so I wrote it from a different place.
Excellent. Excellent. So what's the name of it?
Burning River.
Burning River.
I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, and we are best known for the Cuyahoga caught on fire in the 70s due to all sorts of dumpage and things of that nature. So it's a little bit of a play on that because it takes place in Cleveland. But
So it's important to what he just said. He works in the prison.
He's in jail.
In jail. Yes. He's not there because involuntarily he's there because that's his profession.
Correct.
So how long have you been doing that? How long have you been working in the correction system?
So I graduated from residency back in 2005, and my first job out of residency was in a prison in Boston, in just outside of Boston, called Bridgewater State Hospital. An old movie in the 60s called Tittycoat Follies, which is about prison psychiatric hospitals, pretty jarring, footage that they have from the 60s about how they were treated, this and that. I worked there. Interesting place because they took people off the street as well as they took people from Supermax, and they'd all be mixed in the same place.
Oh my goodness. It was
a great first job. Hard to chase that. I did other stuff in the between about 12 years. I was working just in general. I worked for Ohio State University. Then I worked for the Cleveland Clinic here in Cleveland.
Okay.
And then I came to the jail in August of 2019. So jail and prison, right? Jail is pre-sentencing detention, meaning these are all theoretically innocent until proven guilty. Right? Okay. Whereas in prison, they have already been sentenced. They are sent out to prison. So it's a very different population. Here, it's a very acute, lots of drugs, lots of psychosis, meaning crazy, lots of mania, lots of very interesting people. I like it very much. And if you allow me, so this building was built in the 70s, and I like to say that it was built old. You know what I mean? It was already old when they opened it, right? One of those justice centers that they built.
Yeah.
And it's got elevators that in some ways they operate independently of buttons or anything like that. And I was getting into one of these elevators, and it's a very unusual elevator. It's got the front part is, about 6 feet tall, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the back part, the last 4 feet, is about 10 feet tall. Sort of like if you wanted to wedge in furniture or something, you'd use this.
I have never ever seen an elevator like that.
It's a bizarre elevator. And I got to thinking that this elevator has a mind of its own, a la Stephen King. It's going to do what it wants. And from there, I got the idea for the novel. It developed from there. But sometimes those little germs, those little things, they can turn into something. So what if this was an elevator that had a mind of its own?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So,
excellent. Go ahead.
No. That was just kind of the germ of the idea. Then the story is really about a guy, and because I'm a psychiatrist, I'm always interested in how people change. Are they capable? Are we capable of changing? What's the cake is baked? Can we really change who we are? Because everybody goes through this, especially the older we get. So the protagonist, his name is Frank Wills, right? He's back from, he's done Iraq. Right. He's a combat veteran in Iraq in the Marines. He comes back and the story begins where he's not successful. Right. He's separated from his wife. He can't hold down a job. He's one of these guys. Every job he goes to, he's great right up off the gates. And then after about 2-3 months, he starts telling them what they're doing wrong. And it's, the bloom comes off the rose. Right. And so then they start to, they separate after 4 months. And he feels that they're a shit organization, pardon my French. They're the problems. They're the reasons that things went bad. And they just what happened, right? What blew up?
Right.
He's in that place. And it goes from there. What would it take to really make a change to that? And he ends up in a, without being too much, giving too much away, he ends up in an otherworldly type of prison. where he has to navigate through a lot of different scenarios, a sort of a Dante's Inferno, a modern day Dante's Inferno. He has to navigate a lot of different things in order to find his way out.
Mm-hmm.
But in that process, he's a man, he's one of these guys where, you know, the immovable object, that's going to stand in his way, right? What happens when he meets that unyielding force and he has to bowl his way through? Does he learn from it? Does he not learn from it? That was really the essence of the
Interesting.
Story.
Interesting. I'm still kind of hooked on that elevator. That is bizarre. Then it has a mind of its own, so it can go wherever it wants to go or take you wherever it wants to take you.
Correct. You press four, maybe you go up, maybe you go down.
Right. Oh, interesting, interesting. So do any of the characters come out of interactions with other people where you work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Not nothing specific, meaning, but
right.
But there's the way that it's phrased here is there's pods, right? Different pods of guys, right? And women. We have women too. Mm-hmm. And there are pods where there's more aggressive people. There's pods where there are, more drug addicts, things of that nature. And there's certain typesets. There's certain archetypes that come out of it. Mm-hmm. And from there, I draw some characters, some people who interest me. There's endless supply of interesting people here, especially in a jail. Prison too, but in jail, it's, they're really coming right off the street.
Yeah.
They're acclimating. They're, so much has happened to them. They're really in what's called psychological shock. Mm-hmm. Right? They're just trying to figure things out. 2 seconds ago, they're on the street. Who knows what happened? Mm-hmm. It could be extremely violent. It could be drug related. It could be who knows.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're in a place where they're confined. Their control is taken from them. It's really ripe. It's rich of material,
right.
Of human material, I would say.
Wow, that's amazing. So this is your first book in this genre. What did Correct. You write before?
So the first
the
book
humor I, stuff.
Yeah, the first book I wrote was about, so I'm a psychiatrist. So I wrote about a psychiatrist, a young psychiatrist, working in a prison who gets bamboozled by a wizened gang leader to try to break him free from the prison, right? And so he's got he's got like the Alan Alda type character, right? He's mm-hmm. he's bright, but he thinks he's smarter than everybody else. Mm-hmm. He's got a bit of a wise ass. And so it's him going through that process. What's that like for him? He's got a gambling problem. There's all sorts of things. The second book I wrote was a little more personal. It was about how a therapist handles suicide, right? So it's a psychiatrist who moves to a small town mm-hmm. and he gets embroiled in a wealthy family's, all their politics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a mystery whodunit kind of thing with a twist. And again, also, I always have an eye for tragedy, human tragedy, but the humorous side of it, not as a way of making it, as lessening it, but more the black comedy kind of help us cope with what is always right. a difficult situation, especially suicide in a family member, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. But it's that second one, that exit, it's called Exit Strategy. That was a real, real personal for me. And it's more like a mystery, like an Alfred Hitchcock, wrong man, wrong place, that kind of thing. Because he finds himself just being accused of all sorts of things. And he's really just trying to handle
mm-hmm.
all these losses that he's experienced in his own practice.
Okay.
I revisited the first character. So the character who's the psychiatrist, his name is Jojo Black. And I was living in Boston at the time. And there was mm-hmm. a basketball player by the name of Jojo White. So I like that that dichotomy. But Jojo Black moves to Vegas. And he becomes an in-house psychiatrist for a Vegas casino in the third book I wrote called Kilimanjaro. And that's really just a look at family dynamics in a casino that's going under, but also looking at a transition from the father to the sons. And it's the casino. I modeled it after the casino where Elvis did his right, where he stayed, where he laid his head back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And so a little bit of play on that, on Elvis and what it's like to be in Vegas and things like that. And then the last one I wrote before this was called Dr. Julik. And this was Julik is a Russian word for like a wise guy, that kind of thing. Not in the criminal thing, but mm-hmm. more like the style.
The character,
yeah. So it's a surgical intern in a county hospital who sees that things work that if you grease wheels in a county hospital, like in socialized medicine, you can make things happen. So he develops a cash clinic for gangs. So if you have trauma, you can get in easier, and you know. And it's almost like that kid who doesn't want to pay his dues. He just wants to jump the line. He wants to be, you know, become big shot, and he gets way in over his head. And I like that theme, by the way. That's a theme I have in a couple of my books, where somebody thinks it's almost like that Rushmore from Wes Anderson, where they think that they're more than they are, and so they, you know. So in Kilimanjaro, they plot to undo the Super Bowl, to somehow game the Super Bowl. This is back in the, you know, I said it in two different times, when the Patriots played the Giants the first time and when the Patriots played the Giants the second time. And so they're trying to game the system by influencing one of the players. But it's a terrible scheme. It's never has a chance to succeed. I mean, the NFL is a huge organization. They see things like this coming a million miles away. But this is, you know, delusions of grandeur that, you know, I like those kinds of things. I like people who have delusions of grandeur who try and.
Right, right. Excellent, excellent. So, when you find time to write, I mean, it's got to be your hours have got to be just kind of crazy or on call or whatever, right?
It's been so. I have four kids, and when they were younger, I'd put them to bed and then I'd write. Now they're older, they're teens, and so they need time. But it's nights and weekends whenever I can find the time. But it's never enough. It's never enough. I, you know, it's like I get built up. I get more irritable. I get more, you know, until I put things on paper, so to speak.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So you're with Defiance Press. Yes. When does the book come out?
May 7th.
May 7th. That's just right around the corner.
4 weeks. 4 weeks from today.
Yeah. It's right around the corner. Excellent, excellent. So you write. You got four kids. You work in a jail. What else do you have time to do?
I got three dogs.
Three dogs, though. Okay, that adds up.
Because I'm insane.
I got one.
Yeah. Well, we started with one, and then we had a real difficult time finding a second one. We thought the first one needed my wife's a physician, too, so we're not at home that much. We thought they needed a friend. That went many different iterations and lack of successes. Then we got a second one. And then my oldest daughter she left the house. She's 18. She left the house. And, you know, I went briefly psychotic, and I got a third dog to replace her. So, it's a golden retriever.
Okay.
And they're just, you know, he's 70 pounds of energy, and he's just destructive and a lot of fun.
Yeah. When my son went in the army, because I was home, I worked from home, so I was home all the time, right? And I saw him every day. And then when he went in the army, he wasn't there that day. That next day, I'm like, man, I am like, I'm lost, you know, from the.
You know, you were also in the military?
I was. So I knew what he was going through. So that, you know, that kind of made me feel pretty good.
So he went into the army.
He did. Yeah, and he's out now. But yeah. So I was like, same thing. I was like, man, what am I going to do all day? I mean, you know, who am I going to go to lunch with, or who am I going to bother? Who's going to bother me? So that was pretty nice. So do you have another book you want to write after this, or is this on a series, or how is this going to work?
It's not on a series. I guess I'm not really much of a series guy. I do have other things I'm working on, because there's always ideas percolating. It's just, again, making that time.
It is tough. So how do you plan? When I write, I don't necessarily I want to write so many words. If I start a chapter, I want to finish it. Or sometimes I'll say, okay, hey, I want to write 1,000 words today, or because I need to catch up. Or a lot of times I'll just say, I need to be done by this date. How am I going to do that? And then backward plan.
Right. That's a smarter way to do it. I'm catch as catch can, and that's not a smart way to do it. sometimes it's the scene is bursting to get out. And sometimes I'm sitting there and I just, you know, I do my best to get something done. And I, you know, depending on the lateness of the hour, I tell myself, yeah, you know what, that's enough. That's enough for today. That kind of.
Yeah, I know. I'm more of a morning writer, because by the end of the day, I'm just like jello. I'm like, okay, I just want to sit back and watch a monk or something and see how, you know, see somebody that's really on the spectrum, how he's operating, going through life. That's a great show, by the way. I just started watching. It's a great show.
That's Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah. That's when he's a detective. He's he's out there.
He's a very good actor.
Excellent, excellent. So when you, how do you build your characters? You sit down and say, okay, this is somebody, he looks like this, or she looks like this. And characteristics, or what's unique about each one of them? Is there something peculiar about each of the characters?
So in Burning River, the main character, obviously, I gave the most thought to, but the other characters that I wanted that to be important, I did. I developed some ideas, some backstories. I put them in there. But it's a physicality of them, how they mm-hmm. present themselves, their speech mm-hmm. patterns. That's not always easy to convey, right? The speech yes. patterns. One of the characters I have is Puerto Rican. And he has a certain confidence that just comes through with his speech, his style, and interestingly for the story, he's a criminal, right? The main character is not a criminal. The main character is a guy who is going through it, right? He's having mm-hmm. a difficult time finding himself. The other characters are criminals, right? In the classic sense that they've committed crimes. Mm-hmm. And this character is more comfortable in his own skin. He knows who he is more so than the protagonist, more than the main character who's still trying to find his way through. And I like that about some of these characters. They know who they are. They know why they're there, what they're doing.
Right. So that's one thing, you know, when you do a series, is how much of that character do you describe in the second book or the third book? You don't want to, some of this read, you know, the first, second year to the third, you don't have to describe every character again. They're just, okay, that's just wasted time and space. And you're just putting a lot of words in there for nothing. Do you outline or do you just pants it?
Both.
Okay.
With Burning River, it was extensive outlining.
Okay.
Extensive outlining. With some of the other ones, it's just pants it because I liked the idea of seeing how things go and you never know how it's going to go. You start off and it can go in different places, but I read a lot about writing, as I'm sure mm-hmm. you do, and it's always, you would never build a house without a blueprint, and I always think, well, you know, I'm part of me's Amish, so what the hell, maybe I would, you know what I mean? In other words, yeah, but it's true, because the problem is you go off on a tangent, and you get to a place, and you're like, shit, how do I reconcile all that? How do I make this work so that it's, you know, because it can drive you nuts.
Yeah.
And how do I make it so that it's original and then I'm not retreading my own work or someone else's work or something mm-hmm. I saw in a movie? It's hard.
That's tough. It's tough. I mean, there's a lot of movies been made and there's a lot of books been written.
Yes.
So you try to do, you know, the catch is I'm a pantser per se. I might have things that I want to put in the book, right? That I want to make sure where do I put them and everything. But typically I'll just start writing. Or I'll have an idea and I'll start writing on that idea. And I've got, you know, probably 10, 15 books with, you know, 5 pages written of each of them. And just, you come to a certain point and go, okay, I don't like that. I'm going to do something else. Or I'll do a timeline when I do the books. Where am I at in the timeline of the book, of the scene and the characters and things like that? Because I have no formal upbringing in writing or education in writing at all. That's probably evident.
That's the best part. How did you get into this, the interviewing of people?
Well, so when I wrote my first book, I knew nothing about it. And I didn't, you know, my first misconception of the author community was I'm not going to share my book with anybody until it's done. And I'm not going to let them read it until it's published. Bad idea. We are not competing against each other, even if we're writing the same genre, right? There's a lot, you know, people aren't going to read just one book. People buy multiple books. So that was the first mistake I made, was not doing that. Now I do that, right? I do that on X, Facebook, whatever. I get out there, I meet a lot of different authors, different thrillers, espionage, whatever, romance, whatever, but then in the process of then getting my book done and getting it out into the world, I'm like, there's so much that I don't know that it would be good to interview people that maybe have done it and help people like me understand some of the obstacles of, you know, getting a book published. Or, you know, you think, okay, I write a book and that's it. That's not it. That's just the beginning, right?
You found a lot of gracious people?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Unbelievable. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. A lot of folks say, you know what? Yeah. Send me, let me read it. Give you honest critique about it. And you know, the big thing is getting reviews before the book's out. So when that book does hit, the reviews out there. You can't review a book on Amazon until the book is published, but you can on Goodreads. So people can read a ACR copy of it and then post a review of the book in there on Goodreads. So that's good. Or if you get them early enough, you put them on the back cover.
Yeah, I didn't do any of that. I made all those same mistakes.
Yeah. So that's one way to do it. Then the next is, so you know, I always equate a book as a pie, right? You cut it in threes. You got the writing aspect of it, so that's the book. Then you've got the proofreading, the editing, the business part of it, and then the marketing. And the marketing is maybe a bigger piece of the pie because that's ongoing. You write the book, it's done, right? The marketing is always happening. So that was probably the hardest part. How do you market? You only have a finite amount of dollars. Is it Facebook? Is it X? Is it doing giveaways? Is it other promotions through Goodreads or a book siren or wherever, right? And so that's what I want to learn. And then by reaching out to people and asking them questions, you know, and interviewing them, I got, you know, what's a good way to do it based on folks that have been very, very successful. Because it's not, everybody's like, oh, yeah, and you could be writing the same genre as me, the same everything, and that we're still, there's enough readers for everybody.
Right.
And that's the good thing.
And there's demand.
Yes.
There's always demand for quality and time, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the Rolling Stones and the Beatles coexisted, so.
Exactly. Yeah. And then people had people and they had crap and the dung beetle just rolled it up, you know. And so that's why I started the podcast. And I've done probably 70 interviews in the last couple of years. Now, you know, I took a break from it for a while and then I got back into it pretty heavily. So yeah, and then I just put it out and let folks, you know, they can take nuggets out of it. So my thing is just to help authors, visibility of the author, because nobody knows Travis Davis, you know, very few people, right? And I was in a whole nother profession. I was in technology and network architecture and security and, you know, going about writing a book, right? And I've only been writing for 2 years.
Do you write about that, about network security?
No, there's some. My first book, Flames and Deception, was more around geospatial imagery, intelligence, and espionage, and some cyber warfare from China and things like that. And then the second one was more of China's always a villain. Yep, easy one to do, right? And it's more around renewable energy, a cabal trying to take over the world. And, you know, rogue Chinese military and some very rich people.
How do you research that?
Oh my goodness, that is a lot of research. You hit a good point. It's fiction, but you have to make fiction readable enough or authentic enough where they go, yay, and or they read it today and 2 years later. That's the technology,
right? Right. The Michael Crichton type stuff.
Yeah, I do a tremendous amount of research. On that. And then the third book I just finished was a historical World War I fiction.
Wow. It's
called One of Four.
That's, yeah.
And it's
just behind you.
Yeah. It comes out here soon. And it's more of an idea that I had, and I felt compelled to write it. I've actually felt I had to write it. And it's an account of a World War I unknown soldier as told through a father and son who are in Paris, find it accidentally in a Bible hidden. And they're in Paris because their relationship is strained and they have to come back and bond together as a family, as a father, son from a divorce. And they read that diary of this unknown soldier.
French soldier, American soldier?
American soldier. And it takes them from the harbors of New York to the battlefields of Western France, Western Front, all the way back to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery.
Nice.
So that's what's kind of, yeah. And to me, it's almost very emotionally for me to talk about, or even when I wrote it. I don't know why. It just is.
Those are good moments, though. Those are good when, when you feel compelled to put something down.
And that took a lot of research. I mean, you know, World War One. I'll tell you, if you ever do like historical fiction, you better, whatever you put in there, better be the time period.
Right.
Even though it's historical fiction, right? It's got to be equipment, weapons, and things. So I love doing research. So I'm looking at maybe writing another one of those. Can I get into the historical fiction?
World War II?
This could be another World War One.
Another World War One.
Yeah,
because like World War One.
It's fascinating because if you look at the world today, it was created out of World War One.
Right.
When you look at World War II, genesis of World War One, because Hitler thought that the Germans were being taken advantage of in the armistice, right? Or you look at how the Middle East was broken up and how, you know, England got a lot of property, Iran, all these places that were never a country, you know, and were tribalism, and then they created a country. Now look, it's still tribalism. And so that, you know, modern warfare, right? The machine gun, gas, the trench coat, trench foot, Halloween, where we give candy.
That's from World War One, the candy?
Yeah, the candy, they had Halloween, but it was never really about candy. And in World War One, they had to find a way to give quick, immediate nourishment or energy to the soldiers. So candy bars, sugar. And then out of that became trick or treat and give chocolate away after that because they like chocolate, you know.
Yeah, the Hershey bar.
Yeah, and then when you do research of that, you find things that are like, I didn't know that Germany was trying to get an agreement with Mexico to invade the United States, and Germany already told them what states they could have because if they opened a southern front, the United States couldn't send the small army that it had to Europe. Or that we invaded Russia in 1918, 500 miles north of Moscow.
I did not know that. Why did we invade Russia?
To help at the bequest of the British, and I think British and French maybe, about finding some Czechoslovakian ammunition and weapons that was we wouldn't get in the hands of the Bolsheviks. Like, that's interesting.
And how most of the aristocracy was related throughout all of Europe.
Yeah.
And I always found that very interesting.
Yeah,
even victorious kids and such.
The Tsar.
Yeah.
And then even in World War II, well, Queen Elizabeth's husband, if I'm not mistaken, you know, was from Greece.
Yes.
But he had, I think, him or somebody had relatives in Germany back in, you know.
Yeah, his sisters were married to Nazis.
Or the other king or queen or somebody. I don't know. It all goes back. My wife is from Germany. And the town she lives in is Coburg, and Prince Albert, Queen Victoria's husband, is from there.
Wow!
So you know she's all into this. You know the whole
it's monarchy. It's fascinating.
Thing.
It's fascinating. Yeah,
it is. So that's World War One is kind of interesting and about that.
I keep trying to read The Guns of August by Tuckman.
Yeah,
but it's a great time period. I love World War Two.
Yeah, I do too. My dad was like a historian, you know, high school dropout. They could tell you anything about World War II because he wrote it ferociously or read about it.
Yeah.
It's amazing, amazing, amazing. So tell us a little bit about, you know, tell us about kind of your writing style. Do you write, does it have to be like deathly quiet? Does it have to be ambient noise? Do you do it with music? What's your environment?
So I do it with music, and the best thing is when the music fades away, right?
Ah.
So into what I'm doing. And sometimes I'll put something on a loop just to have it in my ear.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to turn the music off because I can't think of the right word, and it's driving me nuts, and I have no distractions.
Music, or is it?
I'll type some music. I mean, I'm a classic rock fan, but I'll listen to classical music. I'll listen to jazz. I'll listen to, you know, a lot of different things.
I like to write in the morning, and I live in Texas, so in the summer it's nice. It's all nice almost all year long, and I like to sit out, I like to exercise, stay in shape. So I'll go, you know, do a walk or go to the gym, and I come back and sit outside by the pool and write with music playing.
Were you in line for the eclipse yesterday?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I was in the backyard. Yep,
it was
a little cloudy, but it was cool.
I'm 1,500 miles north, and I was in the same position.
So you guys
right get outside total, the back, yeah, total eclipse.
That was it was. I wish it would have been clear, but it was amazing how cool it got.
Yes.
Right. I bet it dropped 10, 15, 20 degrees.
Like, same thing here. It was about 70 degrees. I was sweating, and then it went real cool.
Yep.
I was disappointed, though. I was hoping, like, animals would go nuts. I was hoping that cats would be chasing dogs, lions would be lying with lambs, something like that, but it wasn't that dramatic. But it was very cool.
Yeah, I'm glad. I kept my dog inside. I didn't want him to freak out or nothing. She has enough energy. She's a seven-month-old lab, pointer mix from the pound.
And how big? She
is, right now, she's 7 months, and she's almost 46 pounds.
She's looking bigger.
Yeah, we got her when she was 20. We've had her for 3 months. And she is a money pit. You know, I had to take her to the vet 3 times. It's like my kid right now, you know.
Right.
You know, wife and I, they're empty nesters. I have a dog.
They know it, by the way. The vets know it. They know it. They know you'll pay whatever they ask.
Oh, yeah. It's not like I'm haggling for a car, you know. Well, you know what? Don't do that, and I'll, take 20 off it. You know, I'm not trying to.
I had my dogs outside yesterday during the eclipse, and that would have been fine, except some knucklehead decided that the eclipse wasn't enough, so they blew up some fireworks, and that sent them a little.
Whatever.
That's the way it is. I think Ohio's trying to replace Florida for the, like Ohio man, but I don't know. That's unofficial.
Wow.
And still number one.
Man, that is, why would somebody do that? It's not like not like 4th of July or New Year's Eve. It's something, it's eclipse. It's almost biblical when you think about it, right? I
mean, yes, cosmic. I agree.
Yeah, that's you just not like somebody put their hand in front of your face. Oh, look at a solar eclipse, you know. But yeah, it was definitely interesting, and they had it hyped up. I'm like, okay, what do they know that they're not telling us? Not that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but is there a big rock behind it or something? I mean, hurling toward us. I don't know. So tell us where everybody can get a hold of you. And your book?
So the book is going to be on Amazon. I'm going to have a website, josephbaskin.com. I'm really working on that right now.
Okay.
I'm on X. I'm on Facebook. I'm on.
We need to connect on X then. We need to link up on X.
I got to tell you, a psychiatrist on social media is not a great thing. So when I became a psychiatrist, I was on social media briefly, and then I withdrew. I try to manage as best I can. I'm just, I'm one of these older, I'm telling you I'm older, but I'm like, I keep to myself. I'm not a big self-promoter. I'm not into proving that I did something, but having it on Facebook.
Yeah, you got to do that. I mean,
I got to get better at that. Yeah. So I've been hitting my kids up, and of course they're avoiding.
Well, they know how.
That's why they're avoiding me.
My son's 27. He's like, hey, Dad, let me take over all your TikTok and everything accounts. I'm like,
TikTok? I don't even have TikTok.
I said, I'm not going to pay you. This is my
first. Where does he live?
He lives in Northern Virginia. He works for the intelligence community.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does he get home a lot or not so much?
He's been home last year, but we get to D.C. probably 3 or 4 times. Year, because a lot of what I write about, it happens there, and I do research. We're going next week, and I'm going to stop by the 3rd Infantry Old Guard and give them a copy of the book, because I dedicate it to the sentinels that guard the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
That's very nice.
So
when does it come out?
Early May, May 1st.
Nice.
So we'll see how it goes. I'm pretty excited about that. We go out, we get out there all the time, or we'll meet him in Germany or somewhere. It's crazy.
Is he still active duty or is he?
No, he's out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got a good job. Makes money. Just bought a condo. So yeah, he's doing good.
He needs to give you some grandkids.
Well, no, my daughter did that.
Ah, good.
I have 2 daughters. Yeah. So I have 2 total daughters, 42 and 40.
And they live in Texas?
In Arkansas. They live in Arkansas.
Nobody's perfect, but they're close by.
I know. We're going up there this weekend, as a matter of fact. See one of them. See one of the grandkids. Oh, yeah. But
nice.
So everybody get your books on Amazon.
Yes.
And can they pre-order the ebook or anything?
Okay. Yes. There is a link. I have to send that link out and put it on the website. These are things that I got to do.
Yeah.
So a little bit behind the 8 ball.
Okay. Well, you still got time. Well, excellent, Joseph. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise.
Talking to you, and I hope you didn't diagnose anything while we were talking.
Never, never.
Don't send me a bill. So, excellent. Well, best of luck on the books, and we'll be looking for you to great success.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.